For November the 8th, 2019, we talk about Luigi's Mansion 3, The Outer Worlds, and we ask you about your favorite boss fights. Welcome to Level 304. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
And I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Hey there, Dennis. Welcome back.
Hello, hello. You caught me mid-swig of my sparkling beverage.
Ooh, yeah. Normally I say some bullshit before I expect you guys to talk. So that was a...
Well, and then I swallowed it like a big gulp that was in my mouth, and that's always incredibly painful. So
yes. So
how am I doing it masking that pain?
I did a vial. Well, yeah, you admitted it. You expressed it out loud, so that's 1 point against you, but it's fine.
Damn.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll just be over here screaming into a pillow.
Okay.
No, see, have you guys ever done that, like taken too big a gulp of something carbonated, or had something carbonated accidentally go up your nose?
Ooh.
Yeah.
Latter, yeah, and that's no fun.
Mm-hmm.
They're yeah. So that the two are about equivalent, to give you a point of reference.
I have done that, and I have never followed through on this, but my instinct, again, that I've never followed through on, is that would be the moment to do a spit take. Like, if I can wait until somebody says something just really innocuous, and then just go... yeah. Not like at them, but...
That sounded like a fart take, by the way.
Sorry. I didn't want to be very... If I threw the moisture into that, then I would have a lot of spittle over my monitors. So, yeah.
See, I this is going into full-on Bitsville, but the every pop ad ever that shows someone just glugging down a freshly opened can of Coca-Cola or whatever is filthy lies. That would be an incredibly painful experience.
Yeah. Well, it always bothers me in video games like BioShock, where you'll just down a bottle of vodka or something. It's like, I always wonder, like, not even just the fact that you're, you know, apparently drinking the entire bottle in, like, you know, less than a minute, but like just drinking that much vodka, how much alcohol tolerance would you have to be even somewhat functional after that?
So I am not advocating this. However, there is the idea that mouth time matters. When it, sorry, writing that down. No, I'm not writing that down. It's fun to pretend though. No, that mouth time matters. So the idea being, like, if you nurse a drink, it is absorbed through the lining of your mouth. And it skips the digestion process, which would take it through the liver, where it'd be filtered out. So you get drunker the slower that you drink.
Wait. So if you just hold a beer in your mouth, you will get drunk off of that?
I don't know if you will get drunk. I think it is a let's see here, like a bonus factor.
Well, I can confirm this, that you absorb faster. I don't know if you never swallow it, if it'll work, but you supposedly absorb faster through your like tongue and mouth than you would your stomach.
I could also really see it, Matt, differing between like beer is very low alcohol content compared to, say, vodka.
Right. My concern would be less about the alcohol content, which would get to you. You know, whether you chugged it or sipped it over the course of a whole night, it'd be more like a stomach volume thing, you know, like just you can't drink. It's like, oh, they say, oh, you can't drink a gallon of milk in an hour or something like that. And like, yeah, but it's kind of a gallon of anything. It's not just milk that does that, because there's only so much physical space within you for it to go. Yeah.
Well, I always wondered, and I realize this would just, in multiple ways, be an incredibly bad idea. But if, you know, alcohol works as long as it, you know, absorbs into the bloodstream, so any, you know, vascular part of your body, does that mean that one could...
What you're describing, David, is butt chugging?
Not where I was going. Actually, I was going the other direction. Would inhaling the fumes of like rubbing alcohol potentially get one drunk?
I think that that would. It, so, or what you're asking is, can you vape gin?
Yes.
I don't know. I think that that would. Man, the lung tissue is really sensitive. I think that maybe it might be technically possible, but your body would turn on you before you could get the I don't know.
Yeah, I would say that, but it doesn't do it with smoke. So,
I wasn't even thinking lungs. Actually, I was just thinking like the sinuses. But yeah, lungs would probably even be more so.
You want to know if you can puff but not inhale?
Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. This is.
We need like an old timer here who's like fluent in the ways of like hooch and knows like all the backyard alcohol tricks.
Let me see here. From poison.org, inhaling alcohol is dangerous. Know the risk. The bottom line, alcohol vapors can be produced by heating up alcohol or pouring it over dry ice. Alcohol can be absorbed into your bloodstream by inhaling alcohol vapors. People who inhale alcohol vapors get drunk very quickly because the alcohol goes straight to the brain. Also, heated alcohol vapor can injure the lungs. Okay, so I don't
basically,
know.
Basically, what I'm hearing is in the post-apocalypse, where I both have a lot of motivation to get drunk, but not much alcohol, vapor is the way to do it.
I mean, it's almost like you're inserting yourself between between one or two steps of like a double or triple distilling process. You're freebasing your drink is the thing.
I don't need a distillery. I am the distillery.
Well, that's the thing. You know about auto brewery syndrome, right?
Yeah, I actually just saw a news story or something about
it's that. Fucked up.
What is it?
Auto breweries. It is a problem. Like I believe with the gut flora or the microbiome in general, where the little bugs that live inside you, the gut bugs that you have, they will, instead of digesting starches and carbohydrates normally, they will produce a good amount of, ethanol, as part of it. So any carb that you eat, turned into ethanol that is absorbed into the body. Which is, and it can just like hit you, like, as far as I know, and I first read about it a few years ago, it can hit you for basically no reason at all.
Yeah, that sounds miserable.
Yeah.
Basically, the conclusion I've drawn is that the general principle is your microbiome just exists to screw with you.
Or, you know, you can take care of it. It's just holding you hostage.
I go to Skyline Chili to get more sober, not more drunk.
Oh, but you had a good time on your trip, Dennis?
I did. Yeah. It was beautiful. Stamford, Connecticut.
Ooh, wonderful time of year to be up there, I imagine.
It was. Yeah, I understand why leaf peeping is a thing out there.
Yeah,
I get it.
What is leaf peeping?
It's not as dirty as it sounds.
It's most. Oh, you swept me on the joke.
it's going to like the Northeast to watch the to view the colorful fall foliage.
Right.
You know.
I'm learning a lot of terms tonight, guys.
Maybe.
You know, the best part was I went through like LaGuardia and downtown Manhattan to get there.
Oh, geez.
And so it's like by the time I get out to the trees, it's like anything green will be beautiful. So this
you're
is
starved.
Doubly. Yeah, exactly.
Something that's not concrete, please.
Yeah, again, for depressing, it has been more than a year since I've been able to see the stars.
Oh, geez. Yeah, sorry.
I don't want to think about that.
No.
The visual version of autoerotic asphyxiation here.
I mean, like
so amazing.
Like oxygen oh, okay. Wait. No, I think what you're describing is like either edging or I don't know. I think
what I'm describing is our need to start the episode to bail out of this.
Yeah. Yeah, no. So David, what you been up to?
apparently video edging on the stars.
I guess.
yeah, so not too much, honestly, just kind of continuing on. I realize my updates have been rather boring for the last several things, so I'll have to go cause some chaos this week.
Oh, yeah. No, it's, no worries. No worries. I just I ask everybody, so it makes sense to ask you too. What I'm saying is don't make this about me. Don't make me feel bad for asking. David? No.
What have you been up to, Cole? Why are you asking everyone else?
Oh, well, usually I don't. I go last as a host or whatever. I did something kind of cool. People are going to hear me talk about all these shooting stories. I'm thinking I'm going to start like a militia or whatever. But yesterday I went clay pigeon shooting with some family.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's badass.
Yeah, it's really fun. I've never shot a shotgun before.
Interesting fact, despite being usually the person who's like, you know, advocating guns and whatnot on this show, I've actually never shot a shotgun.
Oh. I mean,
it's... Wait, Ben, have you shot a shotgun?
I have not. I've not shot a gun.
Hmm.
Oh, we're 50-50 then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, now it's time for Dennis to be like, well, let me tell you about shotguns.
12-gauge? 20-gauge? What do you got here?
It was 12-gauge. 12-gauge. Cool. It was 12-gauge. It was specifically like, I don't know, what it's skeet shot or whatever. It was ammo made specifically for that. But yeah, no, we went out to like a designated wildlife place, and we had the little thrower and started out being just hilariously bad at it. Cause I've only ever shot like one long gun before this. By about a third of the way through, I was doing okay. Like it feels really badass to like nail one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're designed to shatter in the best way possible.
Yeah.
For viewers who aren't aware, you have to go to the wildlife reserve in order to get the free range clay pigeons.
It was more like, hey, this is like a designated area, like north of Upper Sandusky, where you can go, and it's cordoned off. Like this is specifically for clay pigeon trap shooting.
So the thing I've heard is that shotguns compared to rifles tend to kick much more. Was that your experience?
So I was very surprised at how little it kicked. I don't know if that's just because I had it seated very well. Like I'd obsessively read like safety tips and stuff like that. Cause when I was asked to go, I was like, oh, that's terrifying. Shotguns are explosion cannons. That's ridiculous. So like there was never any kick. I always felt in control of the thing and it didn't hurt at all. However, when I woke up this morning, my shoulder where I was bracing the gun, was very sore, and it continues to be sore even, now, but no, it was really fun. I did not expect to do well at all, but kind of like when I went to the range and it was like, oh, I actually did okay. It's like, why is this a talent that I have? And the only thing my family can say is video games. I'm like, but that doesn't square.
All those video games you've been playing, yep.
I don't know. Like, yeah. But it was
especially because in video games you like never use shotguns for what you actually use them for in real life. Like hitting a small flying thing that's fairly far away is non sequitur. You get right up in front of something in a video game and blast it.
Yeah, yeah. In Resident Evil, you put it right underneath the zombie's chin. You know.
Exactly.
Yeah. But I would go do it again. It's kind of a shame that it's going to get too cold really to go do it appreciably long. But it was an interesting experience, and I'm happy that I kept myself open to it.
Very cool. Nice.
Cool.
Yeah.
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 I don't know. How had you been?
I don't have too much. I have people coming into town this weekend and the weekend after that, so it's mostly just getting ready for that sort of thing.
Gotcha. Setting up your tent or taking down the tent?
It is still set up beside me.
Yay!
This is finally paying off dividends.
What you realize is that it's a great dampener, and so the acoustics just wouldn't be right if you didn't have it up in the room.
It's your studio.
I think I'll be happy to take it down in a few weeks. So, and I also saw the movie Parasite over the weekend, which is like a Korean movie by the guy who made Snowpiercer and a couple other movies, and it was fun. So,
was this like which one was this?
One of the strengths of the movie, similar to like a Tarantino movie, is like, you kind of don't know where the story's going to go halfway through it. But the premise of it is, it's about kind of like classism, and the main character is from a really poor family, and he gets a job as an English tutor at a really like, well-off family. And the story develops from there. So
this sounds really cool. The only thing of his that I've seen is Snowpiercer, and I think that's a very good movie. And that is the least subtle movie about class and capitalism I have ever seen.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad thing. Like I'm down for the message. Do you know, is class are class issues like a hallmark of his work, of this director's work?
No, those are the only two. But like usually all of his movies have something to do, have some sort of message with it. Like he did The Host, and I think that was kind of about like environmentalism, like since pollution is what caused the monster.
So I think The Host was the one I was actually thinking of when you said this.
Parasite. Okay. And I forget, there's another movie. Oh yeah, he did Okja, and that was about like vegetarianism or about eating meat, you know?
Oh, I didn't realize that was the same guy. I had seen stills of Okja. It looked very strange.
It was good. Yeah.
Nice. Well, yeah. I will take that recommendation.
All right. So in terms of movies that are almost certainly going to be horrible, apparently Universal Studios is remaking The Host.
What?
Oh, no.
I feel like this is going to end up being a redux of like them remaking or whoever remaking Old Boy.
That was extremely misguided. I would like to think that we are... Like post like The Ring, I would like to think that we are beyond foreign films needing to be straight up remade for American audiences. It feels like we are that culture is sufficiently global that you could just be fine with The Host being out as it is. Yeah, no, that doesn't sound very good at all.
Yeah, the only instance I can think of where it ended up well was The Departed.
Oh yeah, that's true. I don't know,
but I feel like one point does not a line make. Yeah,
right, and a line does not necessarily indicate a trend. Yeah, huh. Well, at least the Parasite is good, or Parasite.
Isn't Spike Lee supposed to be like a good director?
Yeah, Spike Lee's got some good films under him. You know, Do the Right Thing, Inside Man, Black Klansman. Those are good movies.
He's won an Academy Award for writing.
Yeah. Oh, well, I think we've hit everybody. And I think that we need to move forward in the episode, a regular kind of episode, what with the grind, the multiplayer, and some end bosses. And why don't we get started with...
The grind,
where we talk about the things we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Dennis, you've been away the longest, so I will defer to you.
Yeah, I don't have any huge new things to talk about. Been playing Code Vein more. I got to a major exposition dump, and I'm very pleased with the way the story is unfolding so far. You know, so they've got this kind of big, epic, post-apocalyptic, vampiric thing going on, but a lot of the stories that are unfolding are very small, and that is something I am sadly always surprised to find in a video game, and I think it's something that always works really well when it happens.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, a lot of the stories are about kind of sibling stuff going on. Cool. And then just, you know, being the conflict of doing something right when you also know it kind of throws your friend under the bus. Like there's just stuff like that going on. And it ties to the larger, you know, crazy anime narrative going on. But a lot of the kind of beats that I've gotten in the latest couple play sessions have been very small and touching. So I appreciate that.
Neat.
I also have realized I haven't really internalized just how flexible this game's class system is. And so I can't remember how in depth I touched on it, but you can at any time switch up your blood code, which gives you different scaling with each of your main stats, strengths, dexterity, etc. Gives you access to a different set of powers. But even after a certain amount of time, the powers unlock so you can use them with any blood code. So you're incredibly flexible to just kind of switch out powers and blood codes and all that stuff to be exactly what you want. But I've kind of really focused on bayonets in this run through, which are mm-hmm. the ranged kind of guns with, hey, bayonets on them.
Yeah.
And I found myself thinking a couple times, like, you know, I next run, I'm going to have to do a big heavy hammer run or something like that, when literally like I am three clicks away from being able to do just that and have my stats set up correctly for it.
Wow.
It is incredibly kind in that I could switch over to a blood code that features strength and unlock a couple skills that focus on, you know, two-handed weapons, and probably with less than 10 minutes of effort have a completely viable, you know, strength two-handed hammer build. But for all the games that have come before, looking at you, Dark Souls, I've just developed this habit of like, well, I've decided to go with dexterity for this run, and I need to see the game through on dexterity.
This run is this build. Respects exactly. aside. And I guess my question exactly. is, like, you can just do this at will? Is it tied to any resource, or is it just like a menu option?
It is almost at will. The one thing you would have to unlock is your skills, but you get a currency while you play the game that you can use to instantly unchain a skill from its blood code.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you know, and I should also say that the majority of the time, the blood code that you want to use is going to have skills that relate to the weapons that fit that blood code best. And so by switching over to a, you know, strength-focused blood code, more than likely that blood code is going to have skills related to big freaking two-handed weapons.
Gotcha.
Yeah, so it's just there is a lot more freedom for experimentation, and I'm kind of like realizing, like, I'm not taking advantage of that. Now, that's not to say I'm not having fun with bayonets, and that's probably why I haven't you know, experimented just as much as the muscle memory. But it is a really good thing that I think they did. Like, I don't feel like I've lost anything for being able to switch easily. And I'm kind of working myself up to play around with it a bit.
Nice.
Yeah. So story's doing well. Combat continues to be fun, even though I'm kind of limiting myself to a small portion of it.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see where it goes.
Have they done any more or, articulated any more on the, kind of AI combat partners that you have, the co-op partners?
No, they're still OP. Okay. I will say you get into some encounters where they just get burnt down. And so the way you die in this game is either your partner gets burnt down because, I'll back up. It is harder to die in this game than it is in Dark Souls, because as long as your partner is alive and they have their ability up, they will use an ability to revive you at the cost of their own health.
Okay.
So what can either happen is your partner dies first or you die twice before their ability comes back up. And so if their you know, revive ability is on cooldown when you die a second time, you'll fully die. So that's happening more and more frequently. It is getting more difficult,
mm-hmm.
but your partner still feels as competent and even a little bit overpowered as ever.
Okay.
I switched over from the main guy, Louis, to Yakumo, who is a bit more of a heavy weapons guy, just because I felt like he balanced my dexterity-focused build better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, yeah, that's Code Vein. And then I've kind of returned to the cycle because it has officially entered its first season or their, you know, their cycle with their battle pass equivalent.
Now, the cycle, for anybody who is unfamiliar, that is the battle royale game that's PvE, right?
Yeah, PvE v PvE, you know, whatever.
There's a lot of E's and a lot of P's.
Yeah.
And V's. Yeah, so it is the battle royale game where you win by getting the most contract points, and killing another person does not award you any contract points.
Right.
So getting into extended firefights with other players is bad for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking on the Slack about this. So the kind of approach tends to be either ambushes or quick firefights. Whereas if, you know, a firefight goes on for more than a minute or so, someone is running away and everyone's just kind of like, all right, that wasn't worth it. You know, disengage.
Right.
And live to fight another day. Time to kill is very high. And everyone gets one free respawn when they are downed. So if you die, you can respawn in once, and then the next time you're out for good.
Mm-hmm.
But that that leads to just a really, really different feeling game. And David, I know you've been playing it as well, mm-hmm. so we can kind of tag team this one. You are way newer to it than I am, so I would be interested to hear your first impressions.
Yeah, so overall, I've really enjoyed it. It has a little bit of like a Monster Hunter-y vibe. Not so much in terms of the like just fighting big monsters, you know, giant, you know, monsters type of things, but in terms of the, you know, being dropped into a open world and, you know, having to, you know, run around and kind of prioritize resources, those sorts of things. I've seen it kind of mixed on the PvP front. You know, I've been in several matches where, like, out of, say, 20 people, by the end, like, 15 are killed. So it'll be interesting to see. It seems to me like maybe it's something where they're still kind of balancing those aspects. But yeah, I've enjoyed it so far. What do you think? What's been the standout things for you?
Yeah, I have been learning my heuristic for objectives. So there's a couple of objectives, namely minerals and gas vents, that are scattered around the entire world and are pretty common. And I think before I had been focused on getting those primarily just because they were always easily at hand. And so, like, you know, what is the closest next objective so I'm as efficient in my movement as possible? It's probably going to be another mineral vein or a gas vent. Mm-hmm. The problem is those ramp up in terms of their rewards much slower than some of the other objectives. And every other objective, for the most part, is usually centered on a point in the map. And when it becomes available for everyone. And these are, you know, there's maybe four or five of them around the map instead of, you know, dozens and dozens. So it's much more likely if you're going after one of these bigger objectives, which could be like rescuing research drones, powering up a power station, guarding a mining drill. You know, it's much more likely if you're going after that kind of objective, you're going to encounter other players. But what I've learned is that's where, you know, that's how you get ahead and consistently get top marks. And, you know, I would say it's about a 50-50 shot. You can totally hit one of these high priority objectives, take it, and never see another person just because that happens to be how the map, you know, where people moved and the choices they made put you as the only person who is really close enough to it to make it worthwhile to go to. So I've gotten more and more aggressive on going towards those big objectives.
I think I could also see interesting tactics around doing like hit and run type of strategies with those.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So something I haven't quite figured out yet is the degree to which, you know, those sorts of objectives, as well as things like the gas vents, which are something that kind of gives you points over time, but people can steal them, whether it's viable to basically just purposely capture them for a short period of time and then not necessarily contest them if someone tries to retake them. It seems like with the gas vents, they just operate way too slowly for that to happen. But I'm kind of hoping that might be something they look at in the future, because I could see that being an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, well, and that kind of stumbles on a defensive maneuver that I've come across. If I need to run away from combat and people are trying to chase me down, I'll intentionally run past a mineral vein and just activate the drill on the mineral vein as I'm running past. Hmm. Because what that does is it attracts a bunch of monsters, and so suddenly the area behind me has a bunch of caltrops dropped, essentially.
Salty earth, yeah.
Yeah, and there's this is probably... I'm paying a price for this, but, and they can, you know, it's like, here, take this instead, you know, like, I turned it on for you, you finish it. And that's been very, very effective for situations, even when, like, if they chase me, they could almost certainly kill me, just giving the, a couple additional enemies that you got to fight through. And then at that point you're invested and you see that this thing is now, you know, halfway through mining the minerals. Why wouldn't you stay instead of chasing the person? Because you don't get any victory points for, you know, taking out another player. Yeah. So there's interesting things you can do like that.
Yeah, I really would like to see them add equipment that plays into that in terms of I really think of that did this well was the back when Assassin's Creed had multiplayer, and you know there were certain abilities that were explicitly designed around basically punishing people that came after you aggressively.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And
like
yeah,
almost like be able to trap a drill or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. Or like I could think spray someone with, you know, pheromones that attracts enemies, you know, things like that.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I will be interested to see how they diversify objectives. Right now, there's probably, I don't know, like 10-ish different kinds of objectives, and any given map only has 4. And so there's, you know, that gives its own kind of flavor to each game that you play. But I could see them adding new objectives as you go as well. They've already added like a new enemy type into the game to make a certain objective harder, the power stations. So they have a history of doing that level of changes.
Are those the bad robots?
Yes, the bad robots.
Nice.
And they've done seasonal things. Like right now they've still got their Halloween thing going, and so you can find jack-o'-lanterns. And if you pick, it's not marked on the map, but you can see and hear them. And if you pick them up, you can take them to a receptacle and turn them in for victory points.
Oh, I didn't know you could do that.
Yeah. Yeah. They've shown they are willing to play around with the objectives. And I think, at least the sense I get is that will be a part of the game ongoing, is constantly introducing new special objectives.
So something that I'm a big proponent of in any game is I really like when games will have some sort of in-world explanation for why your character doesn't die when they get killed.
Okay.
So that's, you know, that's one of the things I really like about the Soulsborne games, things like that.
Yeah.
And this one has kind of an interesting thing. All of your characters basically have this kind of weird pod pack on that they carry in the small of your back, and when you get killed they basically explode and cover you with hardening foam so that you don't actually die, and then presumably get, you know, air picked up at some point between matches.
Okay.
So I know, I really like that detail of, you know, actually explaining how you're able to, you know, survive all these encounters.
Yeah. What's really funny is those stay persistent on the map for the rest of the game. And so you'll come across this field that just has like three or four foamed up bodies. You're like, oh, shit went down here. Like something bad happened here. But I've also seen one of the unlocks you can get is changing the foam position of people that you kill. And so I haven't seen exactly what that is yet, but, you know, other than just the standard kind of, they freeze up Han Solo in carbonite style, you know, you might get them stuck in funny poses as well.
Nice.
The one thing I'll say, I won't say I don't like it, but, there are 20 people per game. And that number does not go up if you do squads. So if you're doing a squad of four people, there's only five teams on the map. Which just that the game feels very, very different. You know, solo mode, you've got 20, and you can create spontaneous teams in solo mode just by, you know, you hit a button to offer a pact with someone. And then, you know, duo is 10 teams. Those feel pretty equivalent. Full squads feels very different, which I think that's not significantly different than other battle royale games. I haven't done enough squad play to really say, but I think that I'm not sure how much I like the full squad play. I almost prefer solo and duo.
It's been interesting. I don't think I've ever been in a match where the first person I met, if they weren't already in a pact with someone, Dan immediately offered to join one.
Yeah, people are generally pretty friendly if they are solo.
Are you rewarded for betraying somebody you're in a pact with?
Sort of.
Not, yeah. If you're in solo, you can break the pact at the end and, I guess, try to kill them to, you know, if you guys have the same score, maybe, you know, get a solo victory.
Just to prove that you can.
Well, right. I think you only get like 70% of the awards you normally would if you're allied or if you're in a pact with someone.
You have to split your credits, but theoretically you're killing twice as many enemies. I think victory points are shared. The only world I could imagine this is if someone kills too many other players, they get a bounty put on their heads, and then they are worth victory points.
Gotcha.
And so it's this really elegant, like almost, and I don't think that counts towards other people's aggression. Mm-hmm. So you almost like, you know, you are actively discouraged from being too aggressive towards other people who haven't been aggressive because you'll get a bounty put on your head.
I was wondering if that would be the case, like when somebody would become an objective, and that is actually a really cool system. I like that, how somebody can be outlawed essentially.
I wonder if those are handed out individually, or if you like, if your teammate kills enough other people, do both of you get the bounty put on your head, or is it just one of you?
Yeah.
And then you could break the pact and kill your teammate. Like, here, you finish all the kills. No, I'll focus on objectives and then break the pact and kill them for the bounty points.
Yeah.
Although the kind of check on that is that when you break the pact, it does actually break for like 20 seconds, so they have more than enough time to know what's coming.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So we actually though have kind of an interesting story about pacting. So this morning got on to play a game, and didn't think to look if anyone else was up, and got in, and first person I met offered to join a pact with me. It's like, that person's named Green Laser. And I think you actually didn't realize till the end of the match, right?
No, yeah, I did not at all, which shows you how much attention I'm paying. I saw in the leaderboard on the left side at the end your name, and I was like, oh, we were in a match together.
Yeah, so I realized pretty much right away, but I guess, so
that's hilarious.
Just somehow got matched in the same game and then, spawned almost next to each other.
Yeah, absolutely hilarious.
Yeah. rules.
So yeah, that's the cycle. It's a very fun game. So nice. I will that'll probably be my main squeeze for a bit going here. So if anyone wants to join, I'm happy to win converts. It's done, and I know I've said this before when I've talked about it. It's made by Jaeger, the same people who did Spec Ops: The Line.
That's right.
So it is a good developer that you should support.
Nice. Yeah. Did you have anything else, Dennis?
No, that's me.
Yeah. David, did you have anything additional with the cycle?
No, not really. I kind of second Dennis. It's definitely a good game. I could see it being a game. I have no use for Battle Royale games, but it's different enough that I'm really digging it.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of the only, like, significant alterations of the formula that I've seen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I guess Fortnite has the building stuff, but I don't know. I feel fine throwing out the most popular example of the form.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Have you played anything else in addition to the cycle, David?
Yeah, so I've been continuing on with Outer Worlds.
Cool.
Yeah, that continues to be pretty amazing. I've now recruited all but one members of my party, and other than one who's just a robot washing machine that has literally no personality.
Wait, I need you to parse that for me. Is it a robot that's a washing machine, or is it a robot washing machine?
Or is it a washing machine that only cleans robot clothes?
I'm judging you all so hard right now.
Even me?
by association.
You chose to be here.
Answer the question, David.
Yeah,
we're in suspense.
What kind of fact?
Robot. It is, in fact, a robot who was designed to Roombaize your spaceship. However, at some point, you replace its water steamer with a acid steamer. And but unlike all the other characters that can, you know, actually, comment on, you know, what you're doing and have opinions, things like that, this character literally communicates entirely through marketing slogans.
Are they context appropriate, or is it? Does he just have like three that he cycles through? Okay.
Yeah, it just has a number it cycles through. So it's very on message for the game. It still is by far the least interesting companion, especially considering the rest of your companions are all really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So, dialogue continues to be a big high point. Kind of like Ben mentioned last time, I really like the fact that I think consistently every single dialogue option has the option to just be a smartass.
Mm-hmm.
And they're all pretty much written in ways that are fairly believable. So one of my pet peeves with these sorts of games is often the more aggressive conversation options are just things that are just your character being irrational and just kind of yelling and being crazy. Whereas these are all pretty much legitimate, you snarking at, you know, the person either being a horrible corporate stooge or not understanding the situation, stuff like that.
Right.
I also pretty much enjoy that every time that someone insults one of your teammates, you very much have the opportunity to either, you know, go along with it or, you know, very aggressively let them know that that's not okay. And in particular, I think my favorite is the fact that you can decide whether you view your ship's computer as being a member of the crew or not. Okay. Which is especially funny because your ship's computer appears, at least as far as I am right now, is very upset that you or that I keep treating it as though it is sentient.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, it's I'm trying to comfort it in the loss of its previous captain, and it is very very upset at that I would be so hurtful as to bring that up when I know that it is incapable of feeling such a sadness.
You're expecting too much of it is the thing.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah. Huh.
So any
neat developments with your character build? Any cool new abilities? Stuff that you've run into?
Not really. Honestly, I'd say the biggest complaint I have about the game, honestly, is the gameplay overall is fairly basic. And in particular, the itemization is pretty weak.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like they don't have enough difference in the various weapons to really make that much of a difference, especially since the ammo system is collapsed to light ammo, heavy ammo, or energy ammo. So consequently, there's no mechanic of, you know, potentially keeping multiple guns depending on what your enemies are dropping like you'd have in a Fallout game. And also, a lot of the guns are very limited in terms of what attachments you can use. So, for example, you know, I'm playing a fairly stealth build, and I think I only have one gun right now that can equip a silencer, so it's kind of a no-brainer what I'm going to be using.
So you don't find that gives you more options, or that the additional options are meaningful in any way?
No, not really. It's a thing where really none of the things, even the silencer seems to have fairly minimal impact on whether enemies can hear me or not.
Hmm.
So, yeah, would you say that was kind of your take, Ben?
I haven't done much stealth stuff. The only thing that I've done is I went on a blood rage and murdered everyone on a space station just to see how the game would handle it.
Oh, no. You saved beforehand, I hope.
Yeah, I did.
So how does it handle? Because you can definitely kill like major characters. How does it handle that?
I don't know what it did for the missions, but it allowed me to do it, and it just had the I forget what Spacer's Choice just did not like me after that. Like their respect for me just kept going down. So it's like, okay, I can live with that, I guess. So I could kill everyone. I was on a second floor like pivot over the main area, and so I could kill everyone in that room and shoot down at people. But then when I tried to exit the station, I could not make it out alive. So that was a problem. But
yeah, one of these times I'm going to have to see, because there are several points in the game where basically a person is your problem, you know, and mm-hmm. So it's a thing it's a thing where it's not so much that I actually need to do something. It's just the fact that, you know, you're going to do something I don't like if I don't, you know, if I don't pay you off or complete a mission for you or something like that. So presumably you could simply kill them and then it's problem solved. But yeah, that could definitely be interesting. I do love the fact that the highest reputation rating you can have with a faction, if you read its description, it basically says deserves a bonus.
have you picked up any more like depressing lore about the in-game world? Because I know I found one detail that was kind of sad.
I'm trying to think. I mean, one thing that I would argue is a little depressing, depending on how you look at it, is the fact that if you go and look at your teammates' crew quarters, apparently all of them are on drugs.
Oh. Interesting.
Yeah, like antidepressants, or are they like just constantly rocking the PCP? Like, what's...
It's just like a significant portion of the products that the various megacorps make are somewhere between, you know, sit somewhere between like performance enhancing substances, hard drugs, and like everyday, you know, caffeine, that sort of thing.
Okay.
And so they're not, you know, it's not necessarily like they're shooting up heroin, but it is very, very much where it's like, oh, here's a drug to, you know, use if you're, you know, stressed out to, you know, steady your hand so that you can do surgery, or, you know.
It's like straight up like better living through chemistry.
Yeah. And I guess it's just a thing where it's disturbing to see that in characters that otherwise are just very, very happy-go-lucky.
Does it even have that for the engineer person that you picked up on the first planet? I only saw the photo of her stern father.
Yes. Yeah.
Just a fun detail.
I'm trying to figure out, do you know who gets the Dungeons & Dragons book?
I don't know that. I have not seen a D&D book.
Okay, yeah, on the Raptor area, in one of the labs, you can basically swipe one. Okay. But I'm interested, what was the thing you found?
Oh, there was one side mission where a company, instead of just putting a hit out on a person, it wasn't enough to kill the person to recoup the money that they owed them. They wanted to take that person's organs.
It's like, oh, oof. Yep.
Oh,
yep.
No.
Yeah. To be fair, though, that was actually the mission I was thinking of, where it was, you know, it's not so much that this person's debt is a problem. Really, the problem is the person they owe the debt to. So I could just shoot you and this would be problem solved. You can't owe a loan shark debt if there's no loan shark.
I mean, except in this universe, it kind of seems like they specifically would have accounted for who that debt would be passed on to. Like, just if there was like a next of kin specifically for lenders.
Like, that's true.
All of a sudden, you know, here comes his brother looking to collect.
So one of the things that I'd say is not necessarily as just overwhelmingly dark as some of them, but I feel like more taps into some of the more banality of the whole thing, is the Spacer's Choice mascot, where it's okay. a fellow who Spacer's Choice, their mascot is basically a guy with a giant moon for a head, and you meet a shop owner that is apparently contractually obligated to never remove the helmet, the head, and you can have a extended conversation of just, you know, you asking him questions and like trying to get him to have a rational response, and him responding entirely in corporate pitches. So, you know, it's
kind of like the washing machine.
Yeah. But there actually is legitimate reasons. So it starts out with things like, you know, well, how do you shower if you have to wear that all the time? Well, it sounds like you need Spacer's Choice brand soap, you know, kind of that sort of thing. And then gets more and more to like, but their products always break. And that's why Space's Choice brand products are always new. And then eventually...
That's a great claim. Always new.
Yeah. And then eventually you just wear them down and it's like, look, this is the only job I can get. Like, leave me alone.
It's like on Community where Subway hires a person to be Subway in order to put a restaurant on the school campus, because all restaurants have to be owned by a student.
Nice.
So there's just a student named Subway.
That's good.
I will say, I think one of the good elements or angles they have with their storyline is they definitely keep in mind the fact that although, you know, these situations you're seeing are awful for most of the people in the situation, they're better than their alternatives.
Okay.
So, you know, things where, like, most of the time when you free people or take down, one of the corporate interests, generally speaking, the employees are not happy with you.
Huh.
Because, I mean, kind of the alternative is being unemployed in a society with no social safety net.
That seems like its own message.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. Like, I think that's a strong suit.
Yeah, yeah.
People who are unemployed in this, like, world are pariahs.
Yeah. Well, I like that. That, like, there is no, just individual action is not necessarily enough. That, like, the problem is the system, not anything you alone can actually do to solve it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, also, I feel like this is... maybe obvious, but your engineer companion is just amazing. She could basically be the entire storyline of the game, and that would justify the game.
Nice.
So
yeah. Is Outer Worlds all you've been playing, David? I mean, addition to the cycle. Well, yep. I mean, we can keep this rolling and go over to Ben.
All right, now I got to find a game that we've both played. Cool.
Got to keep the combo going.
I've been playing Fatal Frame 2. I've just been playing Outer Worlds. I don't have too much more to say, I guess, on top of David. I mean, it still seems good. It does seem very similar to Fallout. The missions seem good, though. The world seem pretty fleshed out from, like, the two or three that I've been to. So I'm enjoying it so far. So we'll see where it goes from here. But
nice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Any cool things with your character build
that you've ended up on? No, I got to the second tier of perks recently. There's like, it's similar to like, any of the WB games kind of, where it's like, there's three tiers of stuff and you kind of pick which ones you want. It's a little bit different or it's a little bit better, but, I don't know. It's still one of those things where it's like you pick the first, third of the perks that you actually care about, and then I don't know what you do from there.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Most of them are pretty, like, not terribly meaningful upgrade. It's like stuff like you can upgrade the amount you can carry, or upgrades like your running speed and stuff like that. So at least the top, like the, or rather the bottom and the middle tier don't seem too effective. But I think things like get more interesting when you get to the top tier perks.
Yeah.
They gate them with, like, the number of perks that you have. So you have to, like, spend 5 in the bottom tier before you can go to the middle tier and so on.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Nice.
But, yeah.
So I'm curious, in the first kind of scenario, which city or community did you save?
Community. Yeah, in the Megaton option, I chose Megaton.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, kind of the only answer.
Well, you would think that until your engineer, that is very much like the soul of the series, specifically asks you. Basically, the alternative is shut down the factory, and specifically asks you not to do that because you would basically just be punishing the workers that aren't really the people who are at fault. That's like, now I feel horrible about this decision.
She did not ask me to do that before I had made my decision.
Really? For me, like, she definitely was like, yeah, please don't do this.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to playing this game. That's not an open-ended statement.
That's as much of a combo as we're gonna get then.
Yeah, well, that's fine. That's fine. It was worth happening. It was worth trying. And was that all you had, Ben?
Yeah, that's all I played. That's not Magic or Rocket League.
Yes, taken as read. For me, I've got one. I have been playing Luigi's Mansion 3.
Nice.
Wait, there was a Luigi's Mansion 2?
I don't believe there was a Luigi like a straight up numbered Luigi's Mansion 2. There was I think like what Luigi's Mansion 2 like or Luigi's Mansion on the 3DS, which was subtitled like Echoes of the Moon or something like that. I don't know. I was about to say Dark Echoes.
This one would have benefited from being called Luigi's Mansion 2, right? Because isn't the main component that you have two Luigis in it?
You do have two Luigis. Uh-huh. That's a thing. I'm starting Hex Crank First Hour back up, and I did this. So people who are listening to this on Friday, it'll be up on the DuckFeed YouTube channel. At the end of my session for that, I did unlock Guigi, which it should not exist. I don't know.
I did not realize that was the name.
Yeah, that is
very unfortunate.
Most cringe.
It's named Guigi. I have no idea how much of a meme Guigi is. I have not really looked around for it, and
I'm about to send one. So,
and I've not.
Slack is already full of memes.
And I've not necessarily like looked up a bunch. I've not like watched like trailers or anything for it. I don't know that Guigi turns on you, but I've played enough Nintendo games.
Guigi definitely turns me on.
No, I believe you have made a terrible error, Dennis. I believe that I don't know if it for sure, but if Guigi doesn't turn on you, that seems like a weird thing where you just introduce the slime homunculus who mirrors your moves. And you seem to transfer souls back and forth like most other Nintendo franchises have done this. You know, in Zelda you have Dark Link, in Metroid Prime you had Dark Samus or Shadow Samus or whatever her name was. It just seems like they seem to be playing with fire, and I don't normally get to like, it's evil, kill it, lol, nuke it from orbit. But when they introduce Guigi, you know, it is meant to be a spooky game, but that crossed a bit of a line for me.
I think what you meant is they're playing with foil.
What?
But up,
like your character's foil.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Sorry. Hey. It took me a second.
So I feel like also when you are the second tier version of a character whose life is entirely defined as being the second tier, I feel like it's inevitable that you're going to crack at some point.
Yes, I can see that. You're through a couple of different looking glasses at that point. It's a neat mechanic though. Just at any time you can create like a duplicate of yourself who has like different movement rules, so like he can squeeze through tight places. Like it's introduced when the scientist when Luigi's scientist friend drops a cage on him to demonstrate it, and like, hey, Guigi can walk through the bars of the jail cell like he's the fucking Terminator. But yeah, he can squeeze through tight places, but he can't walk through water or get wet, otherwise it dissolves. And you can kind of switch back and forth between the two of them. And his little ghost vacuum behaves similarly to yours. And for people who are unaware, Luigi's Mansion as a series, you know, I've not played the second one. I've played, you know, a fair amount of the first. It's more about like puzzle combat than anything. You're navigating, you're trying to A, find the ghosts in any particular room, first in the mansion, and then here you're in a big haunted hotel, and then figuring out the order of actions that you need to do in order to capture the ghost, right? So adding extra, you know, any extra complexities that they add on that are going to be more more kind of pieces that you have on the table to arrange to solve these particular puzzles. And that's in addition to stuff that was there before, like charging up your little flashlight to blind the ghosts, your little vacuum, your Ghostbusters proton pack can both suck and blow. I mean,
Luigi really turns on.
I mean, that's what it does. It pulls them in or pushes them out. Like, I cannot think of a more accurate way to describe what the vacuum does. If you hear it differently, it's your problem.
Is it still basically ghost fishing?
A little bit, yeah. You know, where you hook onto something and then you have to walk away from it as it struggles against you to fill up the meter and then do the slam. Like, that's still the basic move. Yeah. Which is, you know, satisfying. Like, they like it is a good way for them to build in difficulty without having it like hurt you. You know, anything that does difficulty outside of like it takes less damage from you and does more damage to you is interesting and good to me. So like more feisty, sure, or more, you know, ghosts with a little bit more endurance are neat to me. Additionally, this is like this game seems to really benefit, like Mario Odyssey did in a lot of ways, seems to benefit from the fact that the Switch actually has good graphics on it. Specifically, you know, the amount of like, you know, just texture work that's going on, the, you know, effects and shaders and things like that. But most of all, the animation, like the character animation in this is fucking phenomenal. Like, it really sell, you know, like a lot of the mainline Mario games, it is, you know, done mostly as a mime. And then if somebody needs to talk, outside of Luigi and Mario, who are effectively mute, aside from saying their own names, basically they're Pokemon. but for Luigi specifically, like all of his characterization, you know, painting him as this fraidy cat who is thrust unwilling into all these situations in order to barely triumph. All of that is sold in both the cutscene animation and like the ways that he walks and looks around. And it does a really good job of selling, like, is there danger around? It, you know, does Luigi know something that I don't? Because when he starts getting more fretful, I know that, like, okay, there's probably something I need to be paying attention to. It feels a little bit like almost a more subtle version of like in survival horror games when you're walking through an area and the character turns their head to look at an item. Yeah. But for this, it's like, what is Luigi telling me with his body language that he is afraid of? And it's a really good
Luigi
use of visual resources.
Luigi
just wet himself. So run, go back to the lab, change into some new overalls, buddy. You've earned it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's super neat, but I'm looking forward to play more of it.
Very cool.
Yeah. Any questions about Luigi's Mansion 3?
No, I saw a bit of it on Twitch, and it does look pretty. The presentation looks really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I love the dollhouse kind of presentation of it. Mm. You know, where like, you know, it is kind of a 2.5D kind of thing where you are looking in on all these rooms from the side, and they do cool stuff with mirrors where there are things that are effectively in the foreground, but because you can't see it, you can only like, you know, recognize it by looking into mirrors, and they do good stuff with like scares and puzzle solving with that. Just nice. A very inventive game.
Good.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, I went back and searched our archives for this, and I can't believe it, but I don't think we've ever had a question just about boss fights. Mm. So a good boss fight can put an exclamation point on your progress in a game and can act as a final exam for the mechanics you've been learning. What boss fights do this the best?
And Ollie writes in with something that is very funny, initially anyway, saying, now you guys are just baiting Dark Souls answers. We should note that the boss image is Orange Sand Smile. So good one, Dennis.
The layup.
Ollie says, I like that, though. I like how you're getting out in front of Orange Sand Smile and maybe Dark Souls answers in general.
You got to know what the people want.
Yeah. But Ollie continues, so I will say Sniper Wolf and Metal Gear Solid. Both of the encounters are heavily thematic and dramatic, and serve to train you for later and to challenge you at that moment of gameplay. I love it. Yeah. Sniper Wolf in the corridor and Sniper Wolf out in the snowfield. It's a good fight. Like, and you know, emblematic. You know, I think that Vulcan Raven gets a lot of credit for being a boss fight where you can approach it from a bunch of different ways. You know, like it is a, like that is specifically a sandbox boss fight, but Sniper Wolf as a boss fight is really really adaptive to you as well. There are a couple of different ways you can handle it.
See, even for a Metal Gear Solid game, those are dumb names.
I mean, it was the original one. Not the original Metal Gear game, but you know what I mean. David, yeah. What does Roop say?
All the end bosses / battles in the Devil May Cry series.
Can you give a short example of what happens there?
Yeah, I'm trying to think of. So the only ones I remember from the first game were you fight this giant spider like 82 times, and then was it Neo Anglico or whatever?
Yeah, and I'm not sure if he's referring specifically to like the final boss or just end bosses and like, you know, the boss at the end of every level. That man, there are so many good ones. I think specifically of Cerberus. Both in Devil May Cry 3, the first time he shows up, and then in 5 when he shows up again, just specifically kind of learning each of his modes and then overcoming your fear of getting right up in his face. I think the first time I fought Cerberus in 3, I did it from the back of the room, just chipping away with Ebony and Ivory over the course of about 3 hours. And something I learned about the game, which I did not know until very recently, is if you use the same attack and weapon over and over and over, its damage decreases.
Oh.
It's like, to where you're doing basically nothing.
It's like Trix and Tony Hawk.
Exactly, yeah. Oh. Which, I mean, given the ranking system, et cetera, is a very apt comparison.
Yeah.
But yeah, the bosses in Devil May Cry are on point.
Ben, what does Greg say?
Greg says, I feel like the final boss in Final Fantasy Tactics is a great example of learning the lessons of the game correctly and having a well-balanced, highly trained, and class skills and high levels. This boss fight is either a cake warm or wicked difficult.
Maybe cakewalk?
Yeah.
Yeah.
This boss, he knows what he said.
Cakewalk or wicked difficult. The Mass Effect games also come to mind as good final exam fights.
Yeah. So Mass Effect 1, RIP BioWare, having final bosses, at least that you could partially talk into, killing themselves.
Shooting themselves.
Yeah. Oh, well. I mean, at least Sarah, you still had to fight Sarah in second form, but BioWare used to let you do that, unfortunately. Yeah. And yeah, Final Fantasy Tactics is a good one. It's weird. Like boss encounters in Final Fantasy Tactics are either sublime or like the worst of bullshit in the game that you just have to power through.
I just remember that in Tactics Advance, you could bring the cards that would let you outlaw certain actions during a fight. And there was at least one boss fight where you could outlaw the only move that the boss actually had.
Yeah, nothing in the rules. Everything in the rules says.
Yep.
Dennis, what does Christopher say?
He says, I absolutely love the Transcendent One, the final boss battle from Planescape Torment. Sure, you could end up actually fighting him to death. Isn't that how most of them go? Anyway, but I much prefer talking the battle to, or Yeah, taking the battle to the dialogue trees. And even there, there's a few different ways you can take him out. Absorb him, philosophize him out of existence, etc. It's so good. Another boss battle that does not have to be a battle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I didn't read ahead. I didn't mean to snake you there with that one, Chris. Yeah. Similarly, you can do that with in the original Fallout. The crazy, mutant mastermind guy.
Oh,
you can point out the inherent flaws in his plans that he didn't see, and that causes him to just give up and lose all will and activate the self-destruct. But yeah, like Planescape in particular, the way that encounter rewards you for observing what it is specifically what that game is trying to say about you and your actions, is really good and unmatched, I would say. Yeah. Let's see. Dan writes, Arkham City, Mr. Freeze, a great way to showcase and utilize the abilities and techniques you have gained, but not allowing you to spam one that you're comfortable with, makes every attempt unique and exciting. I like this response. Like, yeah, Mr. Freeze had to come up here for this question. Mm-hmm. I'm sure if a listener didn't do it, and if you didn't do it, Ben, then I would do it. Just because it's obligatory, and that is an amazing boss encounter.
We had several redundancies to ensure Freeze.
Yes.
It's an interesting design, though, where it's saying, like, no, we're not going to let you do your favorite strategy. You have to do every strategy.
I mean,
like,
you can do your favorite strategy. It just, he just accounts for it.
Once.
I love what it says about his character, that he is, this... A real good foil for Batman, and that he has these preparations. He is able to adapt to you. I love it. It's so good. Go listen to the Arkham City episode of Watch Out for Fireballs to hear more gushing about that. Let's see. Was that me? So David, what does Patrick say?
Patrick says the Destiny 2 Year 2 raids all have mechanics that you need to learn in each step to apply to the boss fight. But the one that does it best is Crown of Sorrows. It does mean that you have to keep a lot of plates spinning in the air, but getting the completion feels great afterwards.
I will believe you.
Yeah, I just wish, Destiny was set up to actually let me play raids.
Is it just a matter of finding teams, getting people to go with you?
Yeah, so Bungie refuses to implement matchmaking in the games.
Hmm.
And then my opinion personally then tends to implement make sure there's always at least one mechanic that would be virtually impossible to complete with a pickup group, usually just in entirely contrived ways.
Mm.
Wait, couldn't you always be the mechanic?
I mean, you can't, but for example, I remember in the previous game in Destiny 1 for the Croydon, however you pronounce it, raid, there are a whole bunch of things where it's like, you have to kill a certain enemy, within a very short time period, or just all of your team automatically dies.
Mm.
So it's just things where it's like that's only a mechanic that isn't suited to pickup teams because you specifically designed it that way.
Huh.
So.
Speaks to, I mean, even with them having, I remember in Destiny 2, they, there's like a big thing. If you queue in for a pickup group for a raid, it's like you have to basically sign a waiver that says, I have 3 hours to put towards this. I will act in good faith.
Yeah.
I think it might even have even had like, I have a microphone. Like you couldn't do it without a microphone.
Yeah.
And still you couldn't get six people randomly together that had enough coordination to do some of this stuff.
Yeah, I think it's, to me, the issue I just had is I feel like it's completely contrary to what Destiny's about to make a significant portion of your player base basically be like second tier sidekicks.
Let's see here. Ben, what does Paul say?
Paul says, the boss battles in Nier Automata are an amazing spectacle. The soundtrack, design, and theme all come together perfectly. How could I forget a giant opera-singing robot who hacks your android brethren to turn them against you?
It's a good boss fight. It's a good level, too. The robot haven. That's a big carnival.
Mm-hmm.
I need to finish that game. I love the aesthetic of that a lot.
So and
I've been listening to the soundtrack front to back for years now. So...
So do all of the boss fights go like 2D shoot 'em up style?
No, just some of them.
Sweet.
Yeah. Dennis, what does Julia say?
Julia says, Into the Breach does this perfectly by including environmental damage, adding more things to protect that also rely on the ability to move them, and functionally doubling the time you have to survive. It tests your tactical understanding, your resources, and your quote-unquote build for both pilots and mechs. And the Into the Breach bosses or boss levels are notable in that they, you know, yes, there is usually a boss in it, and that is a significant problem. But the game is designed so that any one enemy left unchecked can be devastating. and so the boss battles are as much about being able to manage a bunch of things going on at once as they are about one, you know, big bad unit to deal with.
Yeah. Into the Breach is a game that the more that I think about it and the more that I go back to it, just, you know, occasionally when I pick it up to mess around and I've forgotten, like I've lost my edge a little bit, but like that is such an admirable game. For the amount of depth that they have, how canny they use kind of a limited set of things.
And just a system where literally every decision is impactful.
Yeah.
Like there are no throwaway turns.
Love it. And then finally here, Lucas says, Black Knight and Shovel Knight always feels good to go up against. Rival battles are my favorite. The Sorceress also really delivers on the feeling of Shovel Knight and Shield Knight being reunited. you would have to see the way that was written. Of a Shovel Knight and Shield Knight being reunited, where the two combined make you realize, oh my god, these two should have been doing this side by side this whole time. It's really good. That final boss fight of Shovel Knight is amazing. I need to play that again. I've not done any of the DLC. Either the Plague Knight or any of that.
I own that game somewhere. I just have never finished it.
It's really good. Not that, you know, I just throw one more voice into the chorus there.
I think I bought it not on Steam or whatever. It was on like a separate platform, wasn't it? Or it was like a direct download originally?
No, it was on Steam. That's where I got it. Oh. Yeah. And it might have been cheaper on sale or free somewhere else, but.
Yeah, I think I got it through some weird thing and that meant that I just never have it in front of me to think about. Anyway, continuing on.
Yeah. So for me, since it didn't come up here, I will offer the counterpart to Sniper Wolf, which is the end in Metal Gear Solid 3. Shit, did I take yours, Ben?
That was one of my two. So yeah,
yeah. Just in terms of being a really good expression of testing how much you understand the different mechanics of Metal Gear Solid 3, be it stuff within the game or the metagame examples. Of things that you can do either by setting the clock forward so far that he dies or just shooting him in a cutscene. It feels like they really they didn't leave anything on the field when it came to making the end an expression of all the stuff that was possible in Metal Gear Solid 3. It is definitely one of the most memorable boss fights and one that I think serves the role that a boss fight should in a video game.
Yep. It's pretty sweet.
That's good.
The thing is not many games like have all the open-ended mechanics built into them that you can test the player with, you know?
Yep. Not every game will like let you keep food around long enough that it spoils and leave it for him as poison. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. David, how about you?
So as much as I just got done complaining about Destiny, I think the final boss fight in the Taken King against the Taken King is, you know, super, super epic. You know, you end up kind of, you know, surrounded by these, you know, semi-translucent walls of force while the, you know, enemy stalks you, you know, outside of the force, and then periodically, you know, blasts in through the wall and you have to fight them. It's just, it's a very cool feeling of kind of holding back, you know, this dark, you know, power. Also, you know, just any parts of the game that Aeris is involved in are, you know, guaranteed to be hilarious and amazing. So yeah, I think that that would be mine is I think that's, at least for me, maybe the only situation where I felt like the Destiny really had the feel that it seemed like they were going for the whole time.
Hmm. Nice. Mm-hmm. Ben, how about you?
Yeah, outside of the end, I would say I really like the boss fight at Portal 2. I thought that was a good job of, like, testing you on all the different mechanics that have been up to that point, but also, like, doing it in a relatively, like, safe and fulfilling manner where it's, like, it's not overly difficult. You don't have to die and restart a bunch of times. You can complete it on the first one, probably. But and then having a very nice surprise at the end of it. So
nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. That is a good one that I had forgotten existed. Yeah, it's good. It's a good one up on GLaDOS as well.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. So thank you, everybody. Oh, wait, Dennis. Sorry, I didn't mean to deprive you.
You good.
Dennis, how about you?
I am gobsmacked. So I was going to say Devil May Cry, which came up earlier. So that's easy. Okay, and there's a lot of good examples from that. But no one mentioned Shadow of the Colossus.
Oh, those don't feel like boss fights to me. And that's
I was going to say, that's ridiculous. I think those are more boss levels than boss fights.
When every fight is a boss fight, there are no boss fights. Yeah. Right.
So yeah, that one, I feel like it's legally required to mention in a discussion about boss fights, but I agree that several are more kind of level-esque, mm-hmm. and feel almost more like, well, and boss fights can be puzzles, but yeah, there's, those are just in a category of their own. To call them boss fights is reductive.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's me.
Cool. Awesome. Well, there we go. Did I forget anybody? I forgot. I didn't count the men. I got you all right. Whew. Okay. Yeah, thank you everybody for writing in on that. If you would like to participate in the multiplayer, look for the question to go up on Monday afternoons at facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Thank you, Dennis, for posting that up.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games that are exciting to us. Let us see here. The perennial story, David, what has Blizzard done?
Yeah, so Blizzard at BlizzCon basically apologized that they had taken too long to, you know, communicate properly with fans and, you know, that sort of thing, but has, you know, since came out when asked directly and said they will not be reducing the sentence, and most notably will not be reducing the sentence for the two casters. So basically they didn't apologize at all whatsoever.
Right. I'm sorry we got caught is what that read like to me.
And disgusting is in the apology the president gave it. He said, we know that these are just words. You're going to have to see that we're sorry by our actions. And their actions are literally, we are not sorry. We are not changing anything.
Yep.
Well, fuck you. The other thing
is, when you read the interview about where they're asked specifically about, well, what about the two casters, if this was all about like him breaking the rules, and it's not about appeasing China, and more or less their answer is, yeah, we're not going to do anything about it because they were probably involved somehow.
Jesus. But hey, anyway, Diablo 4, you fucking jackals.
Yep.
No.
Come play the cycle. It's a really good game if you enjoy it.
There are so many options to play games that are like Blizzard stuff, but also better than Blizzard stuff. Like, geez.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to play a game that actually is very like Blizzard, might I recommend The Outer World?
You know, or like if you're straight up down for Diablo, yeah, Torchlight 2 is really good, I understand. There's so much good stuff. Like, you don't just don't look, man. Just don't look. I'm gonna get away from that because I'm getting angry. To something that is exciting to me, which is that the team behind Layers of Fear and the Blair Witch game, they are also Observer as well. Observer is a very good game by that team. They are making a VR game set in the Layers of Fear universe, which is really exciting. I like that. I like that team's games. I like what they do to mess with your sense of space and your sense of reality, and putting that into VR seems like a very good fit for good ontological horror, let's say.
To be terrified
to be terrified and to, yeah, and to have the and to have the source of your horror strapped literally to your head. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So that is the good news. The bad news is that so far they have only announced a PC release for Oculus and HTC Vive. So however, yeah, maybe PSVR possibly, who knows.
Yeah, we shall see.
Did they release Layers of Fear on PlayStation 4?
Oh, yeah, they did.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. It's good. It's fun. I think that's one of the streams that got lost in some kind of weird like archiving problem, so I need to like redo that along with the DLC, because Layers of Fear is a good, fun game. Yeah. So that's me. Let's see here. Dennis, what's going on with Kojima?
Yeah, Kojima, in a interview with BBC, ostensibly about Death Stranding, but covering a lot of ground, has said that he expects Kojima Productions to start making films in the future. So that's very interesting. His rationale was twofold. One is that everything is going to streaming anyway, and so games, movies, TV shows are all just kind of be jumbled together. Mm-hmm. So he's going to start making movies on that. And then, quote, if a person can do one thing well, then they should be able to do anything well.
No.
Which is a interesting take.
you ever asked a chef if he wants to farm? to quote Mitch Hedberg.
Yeah.
You know,
so I'm perfectly respect his desire to get into movies, and I think he's probably stating the obvious, and that everything is kind of heading to a streaming jumbleverse.
Mm-hmm.
And it already has, and for the most part. But yeah, we'll see how it turns out, especially given how polarizing his belabored is probably the most kind way to describe it. Cutscenes are notorious for being.
Yeah, it'd be I would be really interested, because if he is the auteur and also the source of the money, it seems like he would have, I don't know, I would be looking for opportunities for somebody to come in and have oversight over him in order to, like, you know, focus and hone the things that he is good at without his excesses. But I don't know. It's
Kojima without restraint?
The excesses. Yeah, that's yeah. That is also. That is also a/the thing. Yeah, it's hard because he puts us out in the, and like the immediate response that everybody offers, and one that I offer as a knee jerk is, snarky, haha, he thinks he's making movies. Like, in the past though, like, he doesn't necessarily demonstrate a really great understanding of the language of cinema. Even in the...
No, he kind of counts that video game audiences are willing to put up with a lot of bullshit.
Yeah. And I wonder if he was restricted to a two hour runtime, as opposed to a 12-hour game, or a Metal Gear Solid case, a 30-hour game. Would that necessarily cause him to focus and hone and all those things?
Wait, you're assuming that he's going to make a 2-hour movie. Yeah.
That's the thing, yeah, right?
This is the guy make a 48-hour movie.
Yeah,
yeah. This is the guy that originally wanted the end boss fight to be a week long.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's getting a lot of credit with Death Stranding, and the team that made Death Stranding is getting a lot of credit for the way that the mechanics and kind of interactive pieces of Death Stranding really build towards the theme. Mm-hmm. And so, for someone who's demonstrated he can do that incredibly well, stepping away from that to say they want to focus exclusively on something that they are probably weaker in. Mm. Who knows? It could be amazing, but it just feels odd. I would love to see him double down on video games before I see him trying to pivot over to movies. But yeah, because that's where his heart lies.
He's proved that he can be buddies with Hollywood stars by making video games. Like there is no wall there anymore. And if his desire is to get to meet and work with these people that he respects, that is a worthwhile thing to do with a creative platform. But he can do it making games too. But I also don't want to keep somebody in a box. So it's conflicting.
It will be intriguing, whatever he does.
Yeah.
Random question. Has anyone figured out, does Death Stranding have a non-stupid plot?
I mean, there are reviews out and people, I don't know. It's when you're so close to release, the /backlash/forelash cycle is way too high. I would literally need to get my hands on it.
Meaning when I say non-stupid, I don't necessarily mean is it good or bad. I just mean last I checked, it wasn't clear that there was a coherent plot that just wasn't just some sort of Stanley Parable bullshit.
It's a very Kojima plot from what I understand. And depending on your opinion of the man, your opinion of the plot will probably differ significantly.
Okay. Yeah. But it is a plot.
Yeah. I am incapable of answering that because I have not seen any of the trailers beyond the first one.
So. Ah, okay. Fair enough.
Yeah.
I did see one video over the week of how they do character creation in the game. And basically they just sit the actor or whoever in this 3D camera sphere thing. And they just take a bunch of pictures of them and have them make like expressions or whatever.
Yeah.
And then they can animate the person completely from that.
Yeah, well,
pretty sweet.
Yeah. No, I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to pick it up when it comes out. But Ben, round us out here with a story about the Outer Worlds.
Oh, yeah. This is just a tiny story. In the credits of The Outer Worlds, they put their D&D characters that died while they were making the game. So it's just kind of a reinforcement that Obsidian actually plays D&D or really into that genre, and that kind of informs the games they make.
Yeah.
And then a side note within that, one thing that's weird too is they have actual people that died above that. That's pretty impactful, right?
I'm happy they put that above that.
Yeah, but one thing that's kind of amusing as well is one of the DMs, John Cotto, killed off I think 5 different level 7 characters in a single campaign. So shit went down during level 7. But
what a dick!
Yeah,
I'd be interested to know what edition they were playing because the
5E.
Okay, yeah, because the degree to which it's how difficult it is to kill a player has varied a lot.
Yeah, and it's usually DM dependent, but I think the rules are it's as long as if nobody's saving them, if the person's just there, they have they roll a die, and if you get to 3 successes first, then you stabilize, and if you get to 3 losses, then your character permadies.
So, but is it if? What I've never been clear on the rules is, say you get 2 successes and then 3 failures, is that then 1 failure and no successes?
No, it's not net successes or net failures. It is just whichever one hits there first.
I do know also, also, technically speaking, the rules for, like, if you're in that state and someone attacks you, you can die really, really quick.
Yeah, yeah, because you don't have any AC.
Right, and, yeah. And I think it's, like, it's something like every attack is one failed save, so if you get attacked, like, more than three times, you're instantly dead.
Yeah.
I guess I only have a sample size of one, but our DM never had people attack people who are downed.
So. Yeah, that is very.
Yeah, like I think a DM would try to avoid player death if possible.
Yeah. So the idea I've gotten is that tends to only come up if you're playing. Basically, in a universe where the bad guys know that resurrection spells exist. So, like, right. In a universe where the bad guys are doing that explicitly because they know that if they don't, you'll just, you know, have the cleric heal them next round. Mm-hmm. Which, if you're playing, like, the fantasy, you know, realistically, like, I can understand that, but yeah.
In the Lord of the Rings system, there's a specific trait that is only given to, you know, very dangerous enemies. That is like this enemy will attack someone when they're down. Otherwise, enemies will see someone go unconscious and turn their attention to the next live enemy. No.
There's another thing too, where it's like maybe 30 seconds or a minute after a character dies, they can be resurrected. So, yeah,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't have anything in addition to add to that aside. I like creative credits. I like when people list staff babies. I like when people list staff dogs and cats and things like that. So this seems like a natural extension of that. Yeah. So how do y'all feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
The credit. Thank you so much, everybody, for listening to The Level, this episode of The Level in particular, but also, you know, The Level in general. We appreciate you. If you would like to help us out, you can go to patreon.com/duckvtv, or you can leave a rating or review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or whatever the hell they're talking about, or they're calling it now. I'm not going to prolong the admin because we are all very sleepy. The sun is but a distant memory at this point. So am I forgetting anything?
Oh, I am. Just because it's still going on, I will plug Deck of Wonders real quick.
Okie doke.
I'll make it super fast. The Deck of Wonders prototype print and play version is still for sale to raise money for both development of the game and for the 612 Humanitarian Relief Fund, which goes to help protesters in Hong Kong. You can go to bit.ly/DOWGFM to get it. That's bit.ly/DOWGFM. Deck of Wonders GoFundMe. And get the game there in prototype form to help get it to full form and also to help support human rights.
Fantastic. So I think that is all. I've been Cole Ross. You can watch my streams on Twitch at DuckFeedTV.
I've been Dennis Furia. You can find me at Deck of Wonders with underscores between the words on Twitter or Deck of Wonders on Twitch.
I will be David Moneysmith. No telling who I have been, but for a while now, I'll be David Moneysmith.
At least until the heat dies down.
I've been Ben Merkel, and you can see Cole's streams at DuckFeedTV on Twitch.
Thank you. And stick
you can see me watching Cole's streams.
should holler in the chat. Yeah. Stick around for some titles. I have one video edging on the stars.
Ah, you took one of mine. Yeah.
Okay.
I've also got Guiji Turns on You.
Okay.
Or Guiji Turns on You. And then I've got Reunited spelled as in the multiplayer response.
Okay.
So I have, a number of them. Ironically, most of them from within our bantering.
Okay.
I had Mouth Time Matters.
Jeez.
Can you vape gin? Fluent in the ways of hooch. Video edging.
Okay.
And shotguns are explosion cannons.
Okay. And Ben?
I got nothing this week.
Attaboy. David, if you do not mind, I counted video edging as video edging on the stars. Since three of us had that, are you guys good?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Cool. Well, I'm going to go and sleep. That sounds good to me.
All right. Y'all. Good night.
All right. Take care, everybody. Have a good week. Right. Safe travels, Dennis.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.